And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We also stream live at richarddugan.com. We archive the programs at the radio show's page, and we link to our guest's website so that you can continue your search, research, investigation, edification, and whatever else it is that you're trying to do to better your life and the lives of the people around you. So please check out all of these various links at richarddugan.com, and we hope that you will also listen to many of the other interviews. And also be aware that some of these interviews are longer than what you might hear on the radio broadcast. We only have 50 minutes. But a lot of times, we go a lot longer than that. So we encourage you to tune into what I like to call the afterview, following the interview. I've had interviews that have gone an hour and a half. So the only way you're going to get the rest of that information, you're going to have to go to the website. You're going to have to go to that particular guest's play button and play it. You can download it and enjoy it that way as well. So please take advantage of that. Well, you know, today is a continuation of a dialogue that we are continually having on this program that sounds an awful lot like we are going to continue to talk about the healing, if you will, of ourselves and those of us who are living with us and so forth. And we're going to have a return guest. Yes, we are. Jill Mattson was our returning guest, and we're going to be talking about sound and how it affects our healing. Jill, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me. It's such a joy to be here. Thank you.
This is a subject that obviously I thoroughly enjoy because it's what I've been doing for almost 40 years, and it's what we've all been doing as far as listening and hearing all kinds of different sounds. Sometimes we're hearing things that we're not even consciously aware of. One of the most intriguing sounds that I can recall hearing, and it's hard to hear it sometimes, and that is the sound of the earth. You can actually, if you can find a place that is as far away from technological civilization, and that's difficult sometimes to do, and you just sit, you turn everything off, take the batteries out, unplug everything, what have you, and just sit and listen. Take the time for, if you could do it for 10 minutes, 20, an hour, 2 hours, and just listen. And we're not even talking about nature sounds here. We're talking about that usually imperceptible hum.
Do you know, or maybe I could tell our listeners, how that frequency is created?
Please. I'm very interested in figuring, because sound doesn't just happen. It comes from somewhere.
The ionosphere, that's a level of our atmosphere, actually reflects down sounds. And so it makes a cavity, if you will, from the ground to a certain number of feet above in the air. And lightning is more prevalent, more frequent than you might imagine. And those sounds ricochet back in this little cavity, and they create a standing wave. It's called the Schumann frequency. And the Schumann frequency, which you can audibly hear, which is wonderful that you shared that, they use that in space flights with NASA. They found that astronauts do not stay healthy without this frequency, in which we've evolved for how many years, and we've always had this frequency. There's also been studies by major universities showing that when a person is healing and getting better, they're hearing or absorbing the Schumann frequency. It's blocked by cement, so it's really good to get a little dose of this vibe, as you said, whether or not you're conscious of it or not. It can be a tiny frequency you don't even notice. But going out in nature is a good way to pick up some of this healing frequency. And in many of my musical CDs, I create the Schumann frequency in the background. Again, it's not something you notice. Like, you don't notice it necessarily if you're in a you know, a woods talking with someone, not looking for it, but you absorb it nonetheless.
Now, are you saying that you talked about the astronauts? Is it because they are now above the ionosphere and that sound can't be heard in the vacuum of space?
Correct.
Okay. Because from what I understand, sound can only be heard in an atmosphere that you could have an explosion in outer space and you couldn't hear it if you could have your ear exposed to the vacuum. There would be no sound.
Correct. Though there is a measurable wave, and
sure,
you'll find that NASA will take that wave up into the hearing range. So NASA and many of the companies that own satellites will distribute, sell frequencies coming in from space, but they've been a little doctored so that we can hear them.
Mm. And I find that interesting because when I watch some of my favorite sci-fi movies and television programs that deal in space travel and so forth, you're constantly hearing explosions in space. And I'm going, okay, I realize that's for dramatic emphasis, but it's unreal. It's not real. It's not true. You would not hear that. But
that's correct.
You've
but
got
the
to...
waves are there nonetheless.
So, in other words, you could have an explosion and you wouldn't hear it, but you could feel it because it would bombard your body or whatever vehicle you might be in and so forth.
With waves.
With
that's
waves.
Correct.
Okay. So,
and when you think about it, astrology, what it is it's these unheard waves coming in from the planets and the zodiac. And you can go on, I think it's Motorola, that will sell you the frequencies for the day. And you can correlate them to the periodic chart of elements and notice something like, okay, from the planets, a frequency is the same as the frequency of zinc. So people today who have a cold are going to have a good day because zinc is helpful for that.
You know, this is interesting because when we talk with many of our guests on a spiritual and or metaphysical level, we talk about how everything has a vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it has a vibration, that vibration is usually going to create in an atmosphere some sound or wave. We can maybe go a little bit further there and just say it puts out a wave. If it's vibrating, then it's going to create a wave.
Correct.
Okay. So everything has a different frequency.
Correct.
So it's putting out a different type of wave. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about astrology, because you brought this up, counselor, you opened the door to this. The aspect of the astrological, I'm even going to take it to the astronomical.
Okay.
When I hear about the various readings, and I'm familiar with both Eastern and Western astrology, Eastern astrology being Vedic astrology, we've had programs on it, on this program. And, I keep thinking about the various elements that are in play in the universe, and then let's bring it down to our solar system without going too far afield here, where as the planets are moving, and not just the planets, but all matter is constantly moving, it has a vibration. In some cases, it has a gravitation, which I guess is a form of vibration. And so when you're talking about astrology, you're talking about the changing and moving vibrations in the solar system that potentially can affect our individual physical bodily vibration or even cellular or atomic or subatomic vibrations. I mean, we have got a lot of things that are constantly making waves. And you must realize that this can get really complicated really fast.
Yes.
Because your cells in your body are vibrating and we're communicating, and mine are vibrating and we're communicating. But there are people around us, you know, maybe next door. Same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So,
and we take in frequencies on many range. Sometimes the volumes are too small for us to hear. It's mm-hmm. in our hearing range. Mm-hmm. But little tiny small volumes like cell signals, otoacoustic emissions, are little frequencies your brain puts out of your ears to signal healthy sounds to your body or directions. Some of the most healing frequencies, according to physicist Robert Picker, are ones, geomagnetic ones, ones coming from the very first octaves, low, deep, earth, nutritious vibrations coming in below our hearing range. And they're very, very significant. So we're influenced by waves, whether we hear them or not, whether they're waves that come in our sight, whether the waves, let's say we're deaf, the waves are still going to hit our skin. Our skin have receptors. Our skin vibrates. If you walking on the street and the car with its subwoofers blasting deep tones rattles your bones, that's resonance.
Mm-hmm.
The sound is the same as that of your bones. It's going in and shaking them. So we perceive that we're an individual, but actually we're in a wave pool with our environment and what's around us. And yes, it's complex. And to me, one way of looking at life is that there's all that positive and negative waves coming, and you're constantly bombarded. And when you look at sound and you perceive the world just by observing nature and how energy works, it with entrainment, like if you had a clock shop, one big grandfather clock, mm-hmm. real loud, and a bunch of little teeny weeny clocks going mm-hmm. tick, 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 and the grandfather clock going tick, tick. In about 8 minutes, every clock's going to match the grandfather clock. Tick.
Hmm.
Tick. That's science. And so to me, the purpose of life is that we need to gain strength in that which we are, which we choose to be, mm-hmm. and overcome that which is constantly bombarding us. And that's why I'm a big proponent of music. Because music, you can craft the positive stuff and put it in the background. No willpower, no attention, nothing. It's just constantly feeding you. And I think we need more of that kind of stuff just because of the challenges of being in a huge wave pool.
You know, I first of all, I understand what you mean when you use the terms positive and negative sounds. However, in the grand scheme of things, there's no such thing as positive or negative. There are just sounds. They're in vibrations.
Yes, that's true.
And so
let me say that it's more like a polarity. For example, the frequency of patience versus impatience in your emotional field is the same frequency. But we all know how it feels to be impatient versus patient. It's mm-hmm. like within the world of duality, there's some type of, I hate to use the word magnetism, maybe charge mm-hmm. for every frequency. It has a like a north and south charge, if you will, because positive and negative can connotate good and bad. But it's more like each frequency, you know, can affect us positively or negatively, or north and south, or something on that order.
Hmm. Well,
because we're duality,
right? And the way that I would, you talk about, you know, we're in this giant wave pool. I think about a almost like a pond that is perfectly still. It's like a sheet of glass, and out in the center, one drop of water hits the pool, and out go the circular wave of ripples in the water. All right. That's just one. And then when you start adding, and that's one, let's just say person.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start adding another one and another one and another one and another one. And now you've got, after a while, when you start putting enough drops of water into what was this sheet of glass still pond, you now have, it's like the ocean. You've got constant movement, and the waves from one droplet are intersecting with the waves of another droplet, and another and another. And we have 7.5, almost 8 billion people on the planet. And there's a part of me that goes, well, no wonder we have what we perceive as chaos on the planet, because we've got 8 billion different waves constantly in motion, constant, and some of the waves that are rippling out from that one droplet or that one person are bigger because they make a bigger splash than those of others who are smaller and hardly make a splash at all. And it's no wonder why some of us feel like a little bit like we get a little consumed by the movement, if you will, of others. But then you take that onto a universal level, you take that to the astrological level, you know, and now you've got the planets. And who knows how many other civilizations of species that are out there that have their own individual waves and their hundreds or thousands or millions or billions of individuals and so on and so on and so on. And it leads me to then ask the question, so is there a or an universal sound that the universe itself makes? Or is that collective of all of the other ways?
Ancient religions profess that. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. For example, the Hindus would say it's Om. Other disciplines would say it's like a frequency of white light that breaks down into components. So in essence, they're looking at all energy and vibration simply through the lens of music. Not that music is all, but that music is something we can hear, we can see, we can measure, and we can measure the effects of. And so you have this like step down process, white light, stepping down into rainbow colors, and kind of like octaves. It's like if the major energies are almost like spirals, like you have the octaves of thoughts, you have the octaves of emotions, you have the octaves of physicality. And then how they're joined, like you're an individual with these billions of people, but the major influences are going to be those in close proximity, except for resonance. Resonance is like when something is the same frequency. So let's say everybody in the earth all of a sudden, for some reason, turned to prayer or a similar thought. There's resonance in that because it's the same frequency, just like we talked about that car with the subwoofer with the deep bones, and it's not touching you, but yet it goes in your skin and rattles your bone because your bone's the same frequency as that deep pitch. So I think what happens is we're influenced by ways in close proximity, and yes, they come in from space, sky, earth, nature, man-made materials. And then also there's resonance. We're connected through it's like things of the same frequency connect together, and antiquity would call it like a thought form or a wave pool or a grouping of collective energy or similar energy. And that's what you do, like in the Hindu tradition, let's say you're doing some of their ancient chants. That is the feeling and the sound pattern to tie into a collective energy. And back to the Hindus again, their music sees that God's white light, these are my terms, and breaks in, God's love breaks into rainbow colors. So God is, you know, he's pink, he's compassionate, he's orange, he's brilliant, he's graceful, he's loving, he's all these different qualities. And they make their chants try to tie into the vibrational wave pool of God, so that as you train, as you chant, you tie into like this huge, over time, globe pool, and you start downloading and filling up with more of the higher vibrations so that you're a stronger force. So that as you get constantly challenged, as life does, you become the dominating force. You become the grandfather clock, and all that little negativity, it's just like little, you know, gnats biting at you, and you just brush them off.
Hmm. You know, we've done a number of programs dealing with sound. And I, of course, as I said before, part of it is my love, because that's what I do. That's what I deal in. That's how I am not only make my living, but how I have a great deal of fun. And I love listening to music. And I don't know how many I'll call them metaphysical or new age albums that I just recently emptied out of the boxes after 11 years of since we moved, and the various people who have created all kinds of different types of music and different types of sound and have been in it for, well, literally decades. Because some of this music that I have, some of these albums, they go back 15, 20, 30, almost 40 years, at least as far as, you know, what I've been doing. And I've even collected some of the you know, some of the sounds and music and so forth and chants going back even further than that, that have been recreated by folks in the modern time here. And it's as you said, you know, we're you know, impacted, if you will, by all kinds of sounds. I find it interesting, too. There was a study that was done not too long ago about those thumps that are coming from the car next to you because the bass is turned up so loud, that showed that when somebody sitting in that car has the bass turned up that high, there is the potential for damaging the heart. Because the heart has its own rhythm, and now you have the bass cranked up so high that it's permeating the physical body and potentially impacting the physical heart's own rhythm if it's not in sync. And if it's not a heartbeat that you've got the bass turned up to, it's something else that that is out of sync. One of the two is going to sync up, and it sure isn't going to be the recording. It's not going to sync up with the heart. So the heart is going to sync up with the recording, which is not the natural rhythm of the heart. And so that's where, to take that to another level, that to me is where a great deal of dis-ease, if you will, comes from when we surround ourselves with, how shall I put it, dissimilar sound waves. When we're listening, and this goes beyond just the audible sounds. This actually goes, because even light is a wave, and I would venture, can be monitored for its frequency slash sound. We can't hear it, not with the human ear, but we can measure it with instruments. Now, everything has a frequency, has a sound. Again, like those, well, hey, there's a dog whistle. You blow it, but we can't hear it. But a dog can, because the dog has can hear higher frequencies than we can. So this is part of what you're dealing with when you create your own music, right?
Absolutely. And to kind of augment what you're saying, it's the pitches that are incredibly important, or the frequencies, the cycles per second. But it's a little bit more complex. You also have rhythms. You have the rhythm of your heart. You have the rhythm of your circulation, of your breathing. Your body has cycles. We have the rhythm of the seasons on a larger scale. And rhythms are an element of music. And you'll find, out of all the world healing systems, the Hindus, they're the ones that primarily use those complex rhythm patterns for very detailed healing. The next thing is intervals, two notes played at the same time. Each note has a harmonic or an after ripple, and waves in close proximity combine. So you get different types of energies by notes combining. For example, a major third bum bum sounds bum bum bum. No, it's bum bum. Sounds very positive and happy, and it, because it's resonant with those types of feelings. Whereas a minor third da 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 sounds a little eerie, scary, and then you can actually measure the quantity of energy in waves combining. So if you listen to the interval of a major fifth, you'll find yourself energized. If you listen to the interval of, let's say, a major seventh, you'll find the exact opposite happening. So you have intervals, you have rhythms, and you have harmonics. And harmonics is like an after ripple of a sound. Our digestion process, for example, is a harmonic ripple. It's, you know, it's like harmonics and their little breakdowns Again, it's part of our human body. It's part of our psyche. It's part of energy flowing. So there's lots of tools when you create music. And I definitely use them all. I use the frequencies, the rhythms, the intervals, the harmonics, because each have their healing value.
This is, to me, again, just utterly intriguing as far as this whole aspect and trying to understand it and put this into perspective for all of us. Because I remember years ago I was attending a Wayne Dyer concert, and I had experienced something back in the, I'm going to say the mid-80s. I was working for a station where we still used turntables, and the engineer came in, and he was installing a new turntable, hooked it up, and said, okay, let's test it out, make sure everything's working properly, put an album on, started to play it, sounded fine, and all of a sudden we got to the vocals, and we couldn't hear the vocals. They were way, way in the background. I'm going, what happened? And he said, oh, I know what the problem is. I've got one of the channels out of phase. So he went underneath and he rewired and boom, and the vocals up to the front. Well, when I first started working on the computer about 10 years later, using the software that I've been using since 1994, which is amazing to me, I discovered that effect when I took a true stereo left-right separated wave. I took one channel and I flipped it horizontally. I take that back, vertically. Had to flip it vertically in terms of setting it up. Then I mixed it down into a monaural signal, and I had the same effect as with the turntable back in the mid-80s when the engineer hooked up that one turntable. It was out of phase. The vocals were way in the background. I just created a sing-along file, if you will. Kind of like karaoke, right? Well, if you have a true left-right, identical monaural left-right signal, and you take one of those channels and you put it out of phase, and then you mix it down into mono, what happens? Because the waves are identical, and you've taken one out of phase, they cancel each other out. There's no sound. They're gone.
And think of the applications. You can look at a virus. Let's say you're looking under a very powerful microscope, and you can see it breathe kind of like a jellyfish blob going in and out. So you can measure the distance it moves and the rate and come up with its frequency. So let's say that virus is 10 seconds per cycles per second. You can then introduce either 10 cycles per second out of phase or 1 over 10 cycles per second, either way. And you kill your virus, or your cancer, or your fungus, or your bacteria. I mean, that's a pretty powerful application.
I had the great pleasure of narrating a video for a company whose ancestor, if you will, had developed a device for that very purpose. His name was Royal Raymond Rife. He had created the Rife frequency generator. Again, frequency, sound, if you want, wave. And that's exactly what he was doing. And he was actually able to. He developed a microscope so he could actually look at living tissue that did this very thing. There's another gentleman here with who I met in, I think it was the 90s, late 80s or early 90s, Stephen Lewis, who wrote a book called Sanctuary. He has a process where he takes your photograph, you send it to him, he puts it into his computer, and I don't know how this all works, but he's got an algorithm in there that analyzes your photograph and is able to determine where your frequencies are out of balance. And he sends the counter frequency, if you will, or opposite, to rebalance it. And actually, it's not the actual opposite, because if it were, they'd cancel each other out. Well, you wouldn't have anything there, but it's to get the frequencies back into balance. But he has to have a photograph, which is really interesting. And it brought to mind that old saying as far as indigenous of the Indians, for example, who didn't want you to take their photograph because they were afraid that you would take their soul or their spirit. And maybe there is a certain element of truth to that, but it's not taking it. It's actually sort of taking a hologram. So you still have the original, and now I've got a copy of it, which has all those frequencies in it. Again, I don't know how all that works, but be that as it may, And it's interesting how that's where our technology is sort of going, almost to the extent of a little bit of 1960s when this first came on the scene, Star Trek and the Doctor using those little light devices sometimes to hover over the wounded area or doing a scan of the body to see what ails you, you know, what's your problem kind of thing. It's to me, it's just extraordinary how far we've come in that regard. And you're part of that, I'm going to call it evolution / revolution that's been going on probably in the last 10 or 20, maybe 30 years or more. But it's not really new, is it? Because you talked about some of the ancient wisdom, the ancient philosophies.
We talk about holographic. That's a whole nother thing that I find really exciting.
Yeah.
I know of sound healers. You're talking about someone who does it with a photograph, but I know sound healers that break your voice into component pitches, and there's free software so people can copy that free. There's others that use galvanic skin pressure. You just like hold a metal pipe and it actually gets into your sweat, which is holographic. Everything's holographic.
Oh, wow.
There's a skio machine that can be used in Europe, and it will tie into your aura and it will do the exact same thing, and it'll give you your frequencies. You can get a sound oscilloscope, just a little device. And I have a friend who will put it on somebody's body, you know, so this is the frequency of this muscle. This is the frequency of that muscle. So it's a holographic world. Like in one of my CDs, it's Deep Wave Beauty. I have the frequencies of the muscles in your face and neck, collagen and vitamins. And of course you absorb all of that in sound. And yes, it's small dosage, but if you listen a lot, you get a nice healthy dose. And does listening to a muscle tune it, tighten it, help it? Oh yeah. But what the reason why I'm bringing that up is that the muscles of your face and neck are holographic of the muscles of your entire body, meaning, I believe, like an octave, so that energy transfers on the same frequency or octaves of it. See, C is an octave, same note, just higher or lower. So this lady wrote me, I didn't know her, and she had been using my Deep Way Beauty CD for looking younger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it does. It tightens your muscles in your face and neck and tightens and firms your skin. But what she didn't know, nor did I, for that matter, at that time, was that she had just had 6 weeks ago knee surgery, and it had gone badly. And she had been yet to walk or move. She's just totally immobile. And by listening to the Deep Wave Beauty CD, to the muscles in her face and neck, within 3 days, she listened in her, you know, she had it going in her sleep 24 hours. So within 3 days, she was walking. Because of the holographic nature of everything, the frequencies of the face and the neck transferred energy to things of the same frequency or octaves, resonance. That's kind of like what holographic means in a way. And so by tuning the face and the neck, she ended up tuning the knee. And by the way, if you look at many of your other body organs, you'll find that the holographic frequencies of your face will also tune other things inside your body, your organs and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I just find that absolutely cool.
So yeah, I do too. So what you're saying is that there's a part of our body, and you're saying the face,
mm-hmm.
that is sort of the our own personal retuning fork, if I can use that term.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's many, because we're holographic all over. Like I said, I have a sound healer that will heal everything in your body and look at everything in your body through your sweat. Sherry Edwards will look at every frequency in the body through your voice. The Skio machine, I think it's Mr. Nelson, he looks at everything in your body through your aura. We're holographic.
Mm-hmm.
And so often when you heal one level, that will have resonance with all of the other levels.
Interesting. Very.
And there's the secret of hermetic magic. And that's what the druidic, Wiccan, pagan spells are all about. If you need to heal on one level, okay, here's a sound that'll heal it. Here's something you can eat
that will heal it. Look at this color. This will heal it. They're looking at things that are resonant, meaning the same frequency or octaves of the same frequency that share energy. So it's almost like you're a Rubik's cube and every little cube has to be in tune. But if they really work on healing that one cube, it has like a ripple effect and it starts to harmonize, if it's strong enough, all of the other cubes.
Extraordinary. Absolutely. And by the way, it's fascinating to the extent that it is so interesting. We've already burned through 30 minutes of this program and we need to take a quick break.
Okay.
And sort of recalibrate only slightly. I'm not out of energy or anything of that nature. This has been quite an energizing program, and I thank you for the information as well as the confirmation. And we're going to talk more with Jill Mattson and sound and healing and all of those good things that are going to help you as far as going into the adventure, into the world of healing with sound. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Please stay tuned. We have more coming your way.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World with our return guest, Jill Mattson. And we're continuing our conversation into the world of sound, which has been my world as far as a profession for, well, almost 40 years, if not longer, as it goes. And it's just, it's to me, it is extraordinary. I'm going to share something with you, Jill, that I've probably shared before with a lot of folks and on this program as well, having to do with a healing process that I did not even know consciously necessarily that it was such a healing process, but it was confirmed by my mother. Mm-hmm. I was home in bed from school, and I think it was, might have been a weekend, and I was laying there in bed, and my mom and one of my sisters were standing over me, and my sister was telling my mom to, she says, make him stop. He sounds terrible. What I was doing was I was moaning, as we often do when we're not feeling good or in pain for that matter. And she says, no, that's how he heals himself. And it was, again, it was more of a confirmation from my mom that that's what I was doing. I knew what I was doing. I knew it felt good, you know. But I did not know that I didn't really put those two together for a long time.
Yeah.
And
sound's a carrier wave.
Yeah.
For example, I can say hello, hello. And, you know, in both of those examples, hello wasn't my message and everybody understood. So there's just one where it's combining with emotions. But sound combines with ways in close proximity. You are not separate from your environment. And so you can utilize sound, such as moaning, to take pain out. In the ancient Egyptian mysteries, there was ways in which they would, like, let's say they had a pain, I'm making one up, in my wrist. And they would imagine, what does that pain sound like? And it really didn't matter what you did. You just start to utter some kind of funky sound. And with your intent, it's the sound, the pain's caused by an energy blockage, and your sound can go right into the energy blockage causing the pain, and it starts to take the pain out because it combines. So the idea that sound is a carrier wave can be used for healing of your physical body, for sharing very complex emotions and thoughts that words are too inadequate to do, and also to receive spiritual blessings.
We did a program not too long ago with a good friend of ours. You may even know him, Jonathan Goldman and his wife. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the concept of humming, the
yes.
humming effect. Now, moaning is, in for better or worse, it's humming.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the areas that I wasn't able to get into with them at that time, and maybe I can ask you a little bit about this, in regards to the type of sound that we make. Now, you made a very poignant statement there regarding words. And I have to say that, you know, words are, vocabulary is so inefficient when it comes to communicating with one another, because the meaning gets lost in the translation, even if you're both speaking English, because you both have different points and references. That's why I think telepathy is an exchange more of, shall we say, maybe feelings and or images. Mm-hmm. And that we'll be able to get across to one another a little bit more poignantly. But until that day, mm-hmm. Where we're doing it consciously, what would you, in your assessment from your study, your research, your experience, and so forth, what is for the human being the best sounds, ways of making sounds, if you will, for our betterment for our healing?
Okay, I want to say two things. I want to answer your question, but first I want to make a comment.
Okay.
When I was reading legends, stories, not necessarily written history, but some of them are in the legends in the history, they talk about these beings very, very early, and they refer to them as the shining ones. You can read about them in the Sumerian Book of Kings. You can read about them in China and in South America. In the Bible, they're called the giants. And there's many references to other beings other than Homo sapiens. And some of the stories are kind of like, I don't know, or movies and stuff. They're higher beings, and they often communicate telepathically, clairaudiently, clairvoyantly. They're thinner and not as involved into matter. If you can imagine being a being like that, you wouldn't need words to communicate if you're fully telepathic, clairvoyant, and clairaudient.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the value as we started to incarnate in matter? Sound was first used more like a jackhammer, maybe to lift heavy rocks, to get rid of a kidney stone, to clear a blockage in your body.
Okay, before you go any further, you say sound was used to move rocks, and that is one of those theories that they use to describe the building of the pyramids, for example.
Correct.
Okay, continue.
Okay, so sound has many uses, but at this point in time, if you're that evolved, communication wouldn't be one of them. So in my understanding is that when languages developed, they would be the actual representation of the energy. For example, let's say you throw sand on a drum, and then you get underneath that drum and you go om 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 ad infinitum. The sound of your voice is eventually going to shake that drum skin, and hence the sand. If you chant om long enough, that the sand will vibrate and create the symbol for om. It's called cymatics. There's a whole like science on it. Certain sounds will form certain shapes in matter.
There was an episode of The Big Bang Theory where they took a speaker, covered it with cellophane, and put a mixture of, I think, baking soda and water or something, and then they drove sound through the speaker, and you could watch that coagulation of liquid and solid, the if you will, the putty of baking soda or whatever it was. I forget what it was. And it was extraordinary. It was and so you're saying if you were to do that from underneath.
And that's what early language was.
Wow.
It was not symbolic like our languages. Our languages, in a way, as we evolve, according to ancient theories, into matters, we become more solid as we erroneously perceive we're all isolated and individual by ourselves, do it my way kind of a thing. We have a symbolic word which is far less potent than the ancient words. In ancient times, every sound had a purpose. Not symbolic, not entertainment, a purpose to influence the other waves. Look at the ancient Chinese martial arts. They'll do a cry with their voice before they do a karate chop because they're going in and they're weakening your muscles so you can't respond. It's not just a willy-nilly sound. It's made for a purpose. And when you look throughout antiquity, your sighs, your moans, all of your tones, they come in like burr, actually physically warms the body. So you say burr when you're cold to warm up. So that at one point in time, we understood that words were energy and they were synonymous with the word in the language was synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about how you come up with healing sounds, you know, what are the best way to come up with healing sounds? I'd certainly have to agree with the Goldmans that I think your voice is your best channel because it's created in you. It's vibrating every part of you. It's internal. And when you hum, let's say you'll change more of it up to your mouth, but there's basically anything you do with your mouth is going to be your strongest dosage. And also I would say, I believe that your body is fully conscious. For example, like if you were to measure, and science can and does measure, little tiny frequencies, volume too low, coming out of our ears. They're called otacoustic emissions, used in some hospitals for comatose patients and babies who can't speak to diagnose them. And you'll find that these little frequencies of low in volume come out of our ears, and they're actually giving frequencies like a radio tower in my imagination to signal the rest of the body what tones and frequencies you need for healing. I find that when I analyze my frequencies in my body, I have a personality, or said differently, I have a certain tonal pattern unique to me, as everyone does. And I'm, for example, always low on the key of the musical note of D, causing me all kinds of health, emotional, physical issues. I find most of my friends primarily resonate the musical note of D, so they are literally completing me in close proximity. I also find that if you were to play Moonlight Sonata to me in three different keys, don't tell me what the keys is, I'll guarantee you I'm going to like the one in the key signature of D best, because it's going to have a much heavier dosage of the musical note of D. So in that case, my body, unconscious to me, realizes, oh, I need the D. Here it is. And it somehow must release endorphins. I find the musical sounds that I need pleasurable. So to answer your question, what would I recommend? First of all, use your voice and turn off your mind. And just make any noise that you feel like, ooh, or anything. Just keep the sounds going. Turn off your mind. Let your body take over. Be intuitive. Don't judge yourself. Just make sounds. And you'll notice that some of them, if you pay attention, feel really good. And if it feels good, then keep making that sound until it doesn't feel good anymore. Then you've had your dosage.
Is this one of the reasons why there are certain musical pieces as well as artists that we prefer over others because of the frequencies that they put out? We tend to resonate more with, I'm just going to throw. we resonate more with Led Zeppelin than we do with Beethoven or...
it's part of the reason, but it's also more complex. It's also their rhythmic patterns, their instruments, which produce different harmonic patterns, their tempo, their intent. It's like a big, each group of musicians like a wave pool, and you're going to be attracted to one that's most healing for you. Even if it's something that's very negative music, with the proper intent, and this is very important because with the proper intent, negative sounding, nasty sounding music, if you will, can come in and vibrate with nasty energy in your body that you have buried, and we all have buried a lot of negative feelings and emotions and situations. It can shake it and almost vibrate it so that it can leave your body. It's cathartic, as the ancient Greeks would say. But it depends on your intent. let's say I'm in a nasty mood and I want to feel even nastier, that same nasty music with my intent, which is bad, okay, can amplify the negativity. So that's why you can have some kids who might, or somebody who might commit a heinous crime, they might have been egged on by the same negative music that could be used cathartically for someone who wants to heal. We're more powerful than we're conscious of.
Hmm. This is interesting, and I'm quite intrigued by all of this because it brings to mind certain things that our society likes to label. There's no question about it. Whatever the characteristic is, you're going to get a label. Whatever the music is, and that's what I find so fascinating, is when people create music. Some will, you know, I don't have a name for it. I don't have a category for it. It just is what it is. And yet we're influenced by all of the people around us, all of the people we listen to. I mean, if I was a musician, I'm sure that three or four of my favorite artists, I would have to say, yeah, they've influenced either my intent to create music or the music that I create. I'm not stealing anything, but I can't help but being influenced by them. So in a manner of speaking, there's nothing new that's being created here. It's just I'm kind of putting all of these different genres from these different four or five different sources into a configuration that is, in a manner of speaking, mine. But you probably could hear those influences in that music. In other words, a piece of music is not created in a vacuum.
I'd agree. I have a book out. It won Best Book of the Year for 2016. It's called The Lost Waves of Time.
Yes.
And in this book, I talk about the legends, starting off with the legends and lores and stories and emerging translations from South Americas and Central Americas, about the music of Atlantis and Lemuria. Then I transfer into the music and the mathematics and the patterns. So I'm looking at their rhythmic patterns, their interval patterns, their frequency patterns, etc. Simply looking at the math and then transferring into the music of Sumeria, going to ancient China, Hindu, the ancient Egyptian civilization, into the Greece, right around the globe. And what I find fascinating is that when I look at the mathematics underneath of the music, music unfolds sequentially. Now, what are the odds of that? Case in point, that I know it's a little abstract there. I'll just give you an example. The ancient Chinese felt five to be a magical number. They would have five notes. They would use five colors, five directions, including center. They would make their scale would be five notes apart. So whatever you looked at their music, it's some like a Rubik's cube of the number five. And then you get a certain type of healing with that, a certain type of civilization, a certain type of consciousness, a certain type of achievements and challenges due to given to that civilization. Then another example, let's go to the Greeks. They're using tetrachords, meaning four. And so to them, a chord's different than it is to a musician today. To them, a chord's just notes played at the same time, and there's always four in a grouping, four played either sequentially or at the same time. And you look at the Greek stuff, and it's nothing but primarily a pattern of fours in your rhythms, in your intervals, in your harmonics, everything. It's like the perfect fourth. It's all about the fours, creating a very different civilization, consciousness. And so what I'm suggesting here is I'm agreeing with you, and I'm saying that not only are we influenced by other musicians, but I also feel like there's some type of, I don't know whether you want to call it alien or heavenly, or there's some type of higher force that influences us as musicians. And then we project it out to the culture. And just one more example to say that, yes, we are influenced by other musicians, but it also comes from other sources, is this. Joel Sternheimer, French physicist. Just like Royal Rife looked at cells and was able to come up with their frequency, he did this similar thing with amino acids in plants. amino acids form together in a certain order to create the protein of a plant, the building block of a plant. Mm-hmm. And when you put those frequencies in the proper order, they're songs. They're beautiful songs. And not only that, he scientifically measured the vibrations of amino acids in plants. Some of them are songs we know. O Solo Mio. There are songs that are like iconic to our earth, and they've come from the amino acid of a plant. So I think that we are influenced on all kinds of level. And the fascination I had from my book, The Lost Waves of Time, is I feel that it somehow must have been orchestrated in that it's almost like the way the civilizations unfold. I'm going to make an analogy of to the rainbow, like, you know, the Chinese play music of green, you know, the Hindus tune to a sea, they play music of red, but you look at music unfold over time, and it's almost like you're rolling through the rainbow. You're rolling through a civilization kind of tuned to different frequencies, and different frequencies produce different emotions and actions and behaviors. So, excuse me, I'm talking too much, but if one were to incarnate, assuming you believe in that, in these different great civilizations, each one charged by the music, if you will, mm-hmm. has a different lesson, emotional lesson, a physical lesson. It's like a playground to learn the lessons associated with pink or the musical note C.
Now,
it's just fascinating.
The science of all of this is so advanced that we have, as a civilization, and I will say certain institutions, if you will, have found ways of using sound, I'm using that in a very generic term, to influence and or manipulate people. Case in point, I think about the events that unfolded, and I can't even remember what year it was anymore. It was so long ago, it seems like. I'm not that old, but it seems like a long time ago. The events that unfolded in Waco, Texas, and the compound. And what they were doing for a while, they were bombarding the compound using giant loudspeakers with music, with sound. I mean, they might have used test pattern sounds or a certain maybe 100 or 1,000 cycle tone to do that rather than, I think they were using heavy metal or something like that, And in using the example of the sand on top of a drum head and then someone underneath oming, isn't that the same kind of thing where you're now bombarding someone with certain sounds, whether it be from the car next to you and that heavy bass, or whether it be you're living in an apartment and somebody next door has got their music up that you really don't care for. And it may not be 2 in the morning. It could be 2 in the afternoon, but still, it's annoying. And I remember reading, I think this applies, I remember reading an autobiography of a yogi, my metaphysical primer, about an experience that he had with his guru where they were both sleeping, but the mosquitoes were bugging the daylights out of him. And they weren't bothering his guru one bit. And he finally woke him and he says, well, if it's because you're not in a place where you can just let them be. And they don't bother me because I'm just letting them be. But if you're going to get a mosquito netting, then get one for me too, kind of thing. And I've often told people this when they're hearing certain things, especially, I mean, we've had this happen up on the mountain where we live, where people are having these parties and the sound travels, echoes off of the mountain walls, the canyon walls. And a lot of times I'm thinking, you know, if I was just to sort of accept, you know, that this is what it is right now, it's not going to last forever. This is a very short-term kind of situation. Life goes on, blah, 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 blah. That it's not going to bother me. And I've actually had that happen where it's not really a question of, maybe it is tuning out, but maybe it's tuning in, and sort of is that a form of protection that we can initiate?
Absolutely, Two things. First, I want to comment on mind control. Mind control, behavior control with music has been done since written histories.
Okay.
It's quite clear in Hindu, many of the traditions. For example, in the ancient Chinese, Lao Tzu, they took their music so seriously, and they would rely upon very psychic people that can observe people's auras, so you can kind of get more detail than we're used to receiving as a Homo sapiens. But at any rate, they had a department of government, and it was the Department of Measurements. So everybody's instrument would be tuned the same. The emperor's job, his most important job, was to set the tuning note, because they believed that the universe is moving and we're moving, so that tune is going to vary. Usually the Chinese were tuning around an F or a green tone. And if the emperor dies, they would assume that he had the wrong tone. And then the next level of government would have to set the next tone, harmonious. They would meditate for hours on these tones to tweak them. And then everybody in their province has to bring in all their instruments. If it's something like a flute, you burn them all, and then you create new ones, because you must be exactly in tune. To keep like this town harmonious with that town, if they tuned on different notes, and again, remember, no radio, no internet, no band down the street. Music has always been controlled by the government since the Renaissance. The Renaissance back, it has never been go play music and have fun. So anyway, they would carefully tune the sounds and the music to sculpt their own people. And then, of course, they would create war music to kind of disable or weaken, you know, any type of opposing force. You find that in every culture. Look at the Egyptians and the Greeks. They are providing emotional virtue building development of children carefully through music. You go into Africa and they are rehabbing their criminals through sound in some of these ancient or even tribes that are surviving today. So the idea somewhere along the line that music is entertainment, I don't know. I think the guy thought of that has horns, a little red suit, and a spiky tail, because we are definitely altered by the prevailing music. So when you talk about, you know, music being blasted to influence a people, oh yeah. Osama bin Laden, for his disciples, he just outlawed music. Could you imagine, you know, listening to the breezy surf boys about happy-go-lucky days and then going out on a suicide bombing mission? I don't think so. So music, since the beginning of time, is a use of mind control, behavior control, civilization control. And that's what my The Lost Ways of Time is all about. As far as focus this, we have, this is a new topic, we have as the humans the ability to turn the volume up on sound. We think we just hear it, but pay attention. Okay, back to fourth grade. Mm-hmm. Some teachers droning on in fractions. Boring. And the girl behind me is gossiping. I can tune that teacher way down and tune up the gossip. My choice. So what we focus on amplifies the sound or the energy or the vibration. With my healing music, if you focus on it, you get a greater dosage, period. And if you put it in the background, you get a lesser dosage. Of course, the thing that's beautiful about music is you can repeat it on the background, not pay attention, and still get a huge dosage without paying attention, just because it's in the background and you can go about your day. But your drip rate is slower when you're not paying attention. So absolutely. Can you get more or less of a frequency? Absolutely. Simply by what you pay attention to. And that's true in life. What we pay attention to ultimately becomes who we are.
That's amazing. Truly amazing. It says that as individuals, we have so much power. and that we can affect and influence ourselves. Let's start there. In such profound ways, which is part of it's just part of a chapter of a book that I am in the process of trying to finish, where it talks about choosing your personal input. And that's kind of the way that I phrase it, your personal input. Everything you see, you hear, you read, you surround yourself with, in terms of choices that you are making. And the book is about choice, and the first step is make a choice. But now you've got to surround yourself and take in those things that support your choice. You don't want to have people in your life who aren't not necessarily supporting your choice, but at least they're not pushing against you and saying, oh, no, that'll never happen. You cannot do that. That's not possible. You need people who are at least going to be there and say, hey, go for it. You know, I wouldn't do that, but I think it's great that you're considering doing that. Go do it. And then, of course, talking about, you know, what you hear, what you watch on television, the movies that you see, the music that you listen to, the books that you read, all of that is personal input. And so it seems to me, I find that I go back to certain music at certain times of the day when I'm feeling a particular way, and then I'll switch to a different type of music at another time in my day. And it seems to me like just like when you are given, different prescriptions, for example, from the pharmacist for different conditions, it sounds to me like we need to put together a list of the sounds or the music and so forth that would assist us in that healing process.
Yes, I do that in my music. I'm sure I'm influenced like every other musician, and that's subconscious. But I put in frequencies, like frequencies of vitamins. This is cathartic music. This is virtue building. This one tunes your spleen, your brain, your heart. This one, you know, I mean, I list the benefits right in. And another thing that's interesting about the ancients is that, you know, we're in this big wave pool. So during the time of day, the energy in the morning's different than that of noon, and the energy in the fall feels different than that of spring. And often music is altered in these ancient traditions to keep people powerful and perfectly in tune to their surrounding environment. And we really don't have those systems. You know, we don't have, you know, 10 o'clock morning music and 10:30 music, but all we need to do is really pay attention. It's like you said, during different periods of time, I mean, you're already doing it. You're saying, hey, this is perfect for me right now. And I would just urge people, if they feel that, then do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I always found it interesting, too, the comment made by the older generation of the younger generation. This is going back. Well, it's probably going back to time immemorial. That music is terrible. What are the sounds are they making? It's just awful. I have to say that as I have gotten older and I have been exposed to a wide variety of genres of music specifically over the last 40, 50 years that I've been consciously aware of it, that I have developed not necessarily a love of that particular genre, but an acceptance and appreciation for the creation of it by those who created it.
Beautiful.
And that it may not be something I'm going to listen to. I'm not going to put that on my car stereo per se or in my phone to listen to or pull it up on Spotify. But you know what? It's serving someone right now. In that respect, it's meeting a need. And I know that there are folks who don't have any, let's say, Billboard artists in their playlist. They have music like what you create, like what the Goldmans create, like what Stephen Halpern. I can't believe I have some of his albums. We have had him on the program, too, some time ago, and fascinating conversation about how he began his process. But there are folks who don't want to listen to a lot of that other stuff. They'd rather listen to non-vocal. Well, actually, non-vocal isn't the right word. That doesn't have lyrics to it. It doesn't have a melody that has various harmonics. And that there's another issue. I used to belong to a chorus and quartet group. And sometimes when you hit the harmony in a quartet, oh my God, it was just like flying. It sounded so great in the ear. What about chords and harmonics in that respect? Because we've been talking mostly, to one degree, about, you know, single frequencies that are emanated. But what about those harmonics?
Well, a chord is, let's say, two notes played at the same time, whereas a harmonic, to me, is an after ripple of sound, really a different issue. But if something is harmonious, that means that it sounds good. When you look at the geometry of your body, of almost every angle in the human form, in between your fingers from knuckles and proportions, you'll find that your body is pretty much like a musical fifth or five notes apart or a musical fourth. You'll find that things that sound good correlate to healthy proportions, healthy things going on in your body. To me, dissonant type sounds can create dissonant health, or, as I said before, it can be cathartic because we all store dissonance. And I know that acutely. I'm an artist, and I can say to myself, because I want to believe, I really want to believe I'm a forgiving person. Someone does something, it's very irritating. I just say, oh, no problem. And then I go and paint about it for the next 3 months. Well, apparently it was a problem, or I wouldn't be painting it out. Mm. It's like we tend to be, unconsciously, we store negativity. So I would say that when it comes to dissonance, that it's either cathartic with our intent or it just simply harms us. When you hit those harmonies, that harmony is going to be like the musical inner of a fifth is the second note of a harmonic chain in the after ripple of sound, a critical interval for health in your body. So if it sounds good, if it feels good, it is good. And as far as intergenerational music, this is just my opinion, again, stemming from my The Lost Ways of Time book, I believe that, when you look at, oh gosh, I have so much to say here. When you look at most of history, not taught in music schools, trust me, but the music is always controlled by the governments. So is the art, because they're controlling the subtle frequencies. They are sculpting their people. And if you go outside of those limits, I mean, they'll kill you or get rid of you. Look at the Egyptian art. 3,000 years, it never changes. That's because they police it. And it's the same with all of them. They're policing their music. They're policing their art. So when you get to some of these older civilizations, I know I'm skipping around here, you know, let's say the Egyptian music is going to be the same for 3,000 years. Chinese music, same, 3,000 years. Today, music, same, what, for an hour? I mean, mm-hmm. But with the change of music comes a whole change of behaviors, thoughts, and attributes because of this resonance, this wave pool, this interchange. So I believe that at this point in time, we are rapidly going through changes. We are making humongous transformations, and it is stemming from the new music coming in every generation. And there's something about us humans that most of us, not all, a few special ones like you, can be very open-minded and accepting of many genres. But most people like the genre that they liked when they were a youth. And, you know, there's a certain rigidity with that person when they can't open up to anything else. But I think that one of the ways that our civilization is changing so rapidly, no controls on music, and each generation is going to have its own special recipe that gives us a matrix of sounds, pitches, intervals, rhythms that give us a whole new lesson, experience, and that's going to be expressed positively and negatively because every sound has a positive and negative manifestation in duality.
Well, you know, you talk about, you know, we've talked about on this program what are referred to as the indigo children, for example, that may or may not be millennials, that are coming into this world who are then going to go through the process of creating their own music. And our technology is allowing individuals free of the institutions to create whatever they want to create. And to me, that's quite extraordinary. I don't know that that's necessarily been quite as free in that sense as it has been in generations gone by, because it was a lot easier to find people, you know, whereas now, you know, if you've got the equipment and it doesn't take much to get the equipment, you can go off into a corner somewhere, create whatever you want, post it up on whatever social media site you want, and boom, everybody is now influenced by it in one way or the other.
Absolutely. I think that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. I would agree. It's fascinating. I want to let our listeners know also, because you've mentioned it a couple of times already, and we need to mention it as well. You have all kinds of healing music and books. You've got articles and videos and art and all kinds of great things on a couple of websites. JillsWingsOfLight.com is one website. And you also have a second website, Jill's Healing Music, where you can find out about and get more of the music that she produces and so forth. And we encourage you to do that. And I just am grateful and thankful that we've had the opportunity to have you on the program. And we're going to have you on again in the future as well, because I know that there are going to be innovations. There are going to be, I'll call them innovations. We're still making sound. It's just that, you know, we're finding ways of doing it. But I'm in complete agreement with you that the best and the ultimate source of making sound is the human voice, because there's nothing in the way, if you will. And it's just extraordinary. I'm not sure if this is true or not. I was talking about polluting the various sources. Light can be blocked, but light cannot be polluted. I kind of feel the same way about sound, that it can't be polluted, but it can be blocked. It can be if it's muffled, it's being blocked. If you've got a concrete wall between you and the other side and the speaker, you're not hearing it as clearly as if, in this case, or if the human voice is on the other side of the wall. You can't hear it as well as if it was right there in front of you, or if it was your own voice. And I find it also very fascinating. This is sort of another subject we'll have to save for another time. How people who have no hearing are actually creating music, because they can feel the vibrations. And so they know, they get familiar with how different sounds feel. And it adds a whole new construct or element to, yes, I can see sounds and I can hear colors. And there is some real truth to that these days.
Mm.
And it's just fascinating. So with the technology that we have today, in spite of the fact that we're all connected, there's only so much that we can do. There's only so much that the institutions can do to control the output. I mean, just look at our president. We can't control his output. So there you go. Jill, I want to thank you so much for sharing so much time with us. This is always a fascinating subject to talk about, and we just barely we barely get started, and it's time to go. And I want to thank you so much, first of all, for your time, but also want to thank you and also ask that should you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Second reminder to our listeners about your websites. Again, we have Jill's wingsoflight.com and jillshealingmusic.com. They're interconnected.
And I have a ton of free music and information and videos and even a sound healing school there.
Go get it. Go get it, folks. Enroll. We're all making sound, so why not make use of the sound that we are making to make a better world for all of us? Before we let you go, three final questions that I ask my guests, and you may or may not have answered these in some fashion throughout the program, but I'll ask you these questions directly. And the first one is, who is Jill Mattson?
I am the voice that will teach this earth about the value of sound and music to raise their consciousness so they use it for positive and constructive purposes.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
The world can be healed by a balanced set of frequencies and harmonies, but they are not aware of that and not even trying to achieve that. And I'm going to help them to achieve that. I am.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
There are many. But in general, it is to, I believe, channel higher energies and explain them in layman's terms and spread seeds so that other people can use this information, technology, and tools to raise the vibrations and lower some of the sufferings and the negative vibes in the world. Amen.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for taking so much time with us here on the program. We really appreciate it. And again, we do look forward to having you back in the not too distant future to continue
Sounds
this
great.
Conversation.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
Thank
and let
you.
The music heal you.
Absolutely. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.